right? We got a lot of different things coming at you today, okay? And I'm just sensing a little bit of a lull right now. That. We don't got time for that. All right, let's go. Crank it, Glenn Gross. Woo!
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
You're listening to Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwert and Derek Johnson on FM 1017 and 1320 KLWN.
Hey, what's happening? Welcome. This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk, FM 1017, 1320 KLWN. With Derek Johnson, I'm Nick Schwert. Happy to have you with us on a lovely Tuesday afternoon. Matt Tate of the Lawrence Journal-World is going to join us coming up here in 35 minutes or so. We have a Let's Rank stuff that we'll close the show with. It's getting hot out. Sweatbox season.
No, it's getting hot in here.
That's what we need. We need to make tank tops that say Sweatbox season on them.
Nobody will understand.
We'll understand. They aren't for anyone else.
It's got to be like 85 degrees in here right now.
You got the blinds open. I told you can't have the blinds open this time of year. The fan's not going. I told you we got to have that fan humming this time of year. I feel like you're trying to sweat me out right now. You're in charge of climate control here in the KLWN studio. Get it going. Come on. The show's just starting. We can't be having this. So we'll talk to Matt coming up here in about 30 minutes or so. A lot to talk about with him, including the fact that KU player is going to be returning on July 1st. Did you see this news?
I did.
On Zion Williamson. You didn't even, you said I did.
I thought before. You were talking about the players returning, but I also saw that.
A judge in Florida has ruled that Zion Williamson's request to stay recovery into whether he was eligible under NCAA rules at Duke has been denied. What does that mean? That means Zion will have to answer interrogatories. And these lawyers speaks pretty tough. In court and requests for admissions from attorneys as to whether or not he received impermissible benefits to play at Duke or while playing basketball at Duke. Everything we heard from all the smart lawyer people told us that he wasn't going to have to answer these questions, that this was a bit of a reach by his former agent who was suing him because he essentially fired her and went with a different agency. She got mad, decided she was going to sue him. And now it's getting really messy for Zion. And it seemed like when this happened that, okay, this is just kind of pushing the envelope and trying to throw everything out the wall and seeing what sticks. Well, this stuck. And now he's going to have to answer questions in court, which is absolutely terrible news for Duke. Again, I will say what I said at the time. You would imagine for the parties involved, Duke, Zion, Nike, his current agency, and maybe even to an extent, the woman who is suing him, Gina Ford. You would imagine they all might want to settle because it will just make everything easier. And a lot of times lawsuits do end up in a settlement. And a lot of times people sue people knowing that you're going to end up settling, but you can't settle unless you sue them in the first place. And maybe that will happen, but I would still expect that he's going to have to answer questions. Now, ESPN is reporting that Williamson's attorneys are expected to file an appeal with Florida's 3rd District Court of Appeal, arguing that the earlier case in North Carolina involving the same parties has precedence, therefore he shouldn't have to answer questions. And they might try to void the case altogether. Probably not going to happen, at least after today's news, but this is a step closer into finally getting what KU fans have been clamoring for months and years in some cases, which is, okay, KU's name being dragged through the mud, all of these players being implicated. When's Kentucky going to get their day in court? When's Duke going to get their day in court? And this may not topple Duke, I'll tell you that, but Zion Williamson is the most prominent recruit to come out of high school since Andrew Wiggins and maybe even since Kevin Durant or LeBron James, but this would be pretty massive if he has to answer questions in court because, as we learned the last time around, even though, regardless of what happens, you know people from the Duke side will say, hey, nothing to see here. didn't say anything that really implicated Duke, and I'd imagine he's going to go out of his way to not implicate himself or to implicate Duke if he does have to indeed answer these questions. But something always comes. There is always at least a little nugget, and perhaps there is a crack that forms that you try to widen after the case. I'm not rooting for Zion Williamson to get in trouble. I have nothing against Zion Williamson. And to be quite frank, I don't have anything against Duke. I don't want to see Duke burn just for the sake of Duke burning. But if Duke having to take some lumps in court means that those cracks widen as it pertains to college basketball as a whole, and it makes the NCAA's case against Kansas look even more ridiculous than it already does, I think that would certainly be a good thing for Kansas, but bigger than that, I think it would be a good thing for college basketball and those of us who want to see the NCAA toppled.
Right, and want to see players be able to make money off their own kind of name, image, and likeness. Like, maybe this is something that leads to that going the right direction, because obviously with Zion, we know that he would have made a good amount of money from sponsorships around the school had that been legal, and maybe he made the money anyway is what they're kind of coming over, but it would have been over the table. And I just think that it would also be a little naive here just to view this as, well, hey, here comes Duke's time of reckoning. Like, here's where they're going to get in trouble.
Right.
Like, for one, it's not going to make your case really, I don't think, any more innocent.
I think that would be short-term gratification.
Mm-hmm. And also, there's no guarantee that, like what happens hypothetically if Zion Williamson is at court and they're like, okay, did Duke pay you? And he's like, yes. And then he's like, did any other schools pay you or offer to pay you? And he's like, yes. And they're like, was one of those Kansas? And he's like, yes. And then you're able to tie it back to the text messages with, I think it was like Curtis Townsend, and I forget if it was Merle Code or which of the Adidas higher up it was. Like, what happens if it comes back on KU?
I want to say it was Merle Code that Curtis Townsend was having those text message conversations with. Here is, I think, if you're looking for why exactly you should care about this beyond the pettiness of, hey, KU looks like they're getting in trouble, I want to see Duke get in trouble as well. Okay, I get that. I understand that. And to an extent, I'm right there with you. Long-term, big picture, the benefit to this, for you as a KU fan, for KU as a basketball program, is that imagine a scenario where at the conclusion of whatever committee ends up seeing KU's case here, let's just say for argument's sake, KU gets slapped with a 2-year postseason ban. Let's say for argument's sake that Bill Self gets suspended for 15 games, that Bill Self gets suspended for a year. Let's say KU has scholarship reductions. Let's say they have to rescind wins. They have to take the Final Four banner down. They have recruiting limitations. If it gets to the point where KU says, okay, this is beyond us just saying it's worth taking the punishments and getting it in the rearview mirror, if the punishments are harsh enough to the point where KU would say, you know what, now we can't appeal this with the NCAA. What we can do is take this to court. You know, a real court, not an independent committee court formed by the NCAA. If they want to take this to a higher court and effectively sue the NCAA, you know what will help in that case? Allies. It will help to have other universities and other basketball programs standing beside you. So it's not just KU versus the NCAA. What if it's KU, the University of Kansas, and Duke University, and North Carolina State, and Arizona, and whatever other schools you want to throw in there? I'm just using those ones as an example. If it gets to that, which would be very far down the road, you're talking a year, 2 years, potentially 3 years down the road, maybe even longer with how slow the system moves. If that happens, which at this point, I think there's a relatively, I'm not going to say it's likely to happen, but it wouldn't be shocking in the least bit to see KU take it to that length. And if they do, you're going to want other people sharing their story. So it's not just he said, she said, it's they all said. The more collaborators you can have on that front, the better you'll be. So yes, I am with you today to say, ha, finally, you're in trouble. Look at you now. But big picture, that doesn't really matter. big picture is now you have another university who may end up having a bone to pick with the NCAA. And you're going to want as many of those as you can possibly have if you're KU, and you have to end up fighting this for another year, two, or three down the line. The Athletic last night released some more information and a timeline on the ongoing negotiations between Major League Baseball and the Players Association. Yesterday, we told you about the report from Jeff Passan of ESPN that outlined the counter proposal. I mean, what proposal number are we on now? Is this four or five? I believe this is the third one that Major League Baseball has sent. We told you about the one that the players sent back, which was an extended season. What was it, 114 games? With the original agreed-upon prorated salaries. The option for individual players to opt out of the season entirely if they were afraid of concerns with COVID-19. And some potential kickbacks for Major League Baseball if the postseason were to end up being canceled, I think in the form of $100 million. Then Major League Baseball sent another proposal that had the season shortened down to 50 games. So they started at 82. Players went up to 114. Major League Baseball comes back to 50. And that is essentially their response to say, if you're not willing to take less money, then we're only playing 50 games. Right? That is effectively the reasoning behind that. Is that correct?
Yeah.
You want the prorated salaries? We're not playing 114 games. So that the 82 at this point seems like it should be pushed aside because the players are standing at 114 and the owners are standing at 50. And it would be easy to say, well, they're probably going to meet somewhere in the middle, which would be, oh, I don't know, maybe around 82 games, right? That would be about right smack dab in the middle. But knowing that that was the original jumping off point, would it be naive to think that that's where they're going to end up when this thing is all said and done? Because I know it's easy to jump to that conclusion and say, yeah, they'll probably just settle in the middle right where they started. But that was a non-starter for the players the first time around. And what the league is essentially saying is, if we did 82, you're not getting your original agreed-upon salary. It's not happening. And what the players are saying is, we're not taking anything less than those agreed-upon prorated salaries. So why would we now think that the players are going to budge and say, yeah, we'll do 82 games and we'll take the reduced salary?
Yeah, maybe that's a good point. I just think that this is kind of how negotiations work. Sometimes you, I guess, like the owners wouldn't want to just necessarily, if their ultimate outcome was, hey, we'll be fine with 80 games, just now jump to 80 games, because then the players would say, oh, wait, they're still not completely to where we are, so now let's meet in the middle. And instead of 80, it'll be 95. But maybe it is something where the owners actually are willing to stand firm on 50 games. I mean, keep in mind that the big cash cow they're looking at is the postseason, and they're afraid of a recirculation of COVID-19 the longer the season goes. So if it's 50 games, you have less chance of the postseason coinciding with a possible cancellation. And it's not just that you have to pay players less by nature of playing less games, but it's also that idea. And I think it's probably worth pointing out the fact that, you know, with the 50-game season, the MLB can kind of approach this, or the owners get to approach this as, well, in that agreement that we got to in late March about how you would get prorated salaries, part of that agreement was we kind of got to set the nature of how long or short the season would be. And the players' argument back is that part of that is a stipulation that the MLB office, like Rob Manfred, can say to a reasonable limit, right? Like the MLB can't come out there and say, hey, we agreed to do the prorated salary, but you gave us free rein on this. We're only going to play 15 games. We're only going to play 8 games. You know, like they can't do that. There has to be a reasonable amount. But what is the reasonable amount? I don't know.
Well, that's the big question there, because you go back to the agreement in March, and one of the lines in there says, if they decided to restart the season at any point, the agreement would require the parties to, quote, discuss in good faith the economic feasibility. And that, to me, seems to be a line that both of those sides should have looked at and said, okay, this could get us into some trouble, because that's exactly what's getting them into trouble. Discuss in good faith the economic feasibility. First off, there doesn't seem to be much good faith between either sides. Second off, who gets to decide what is economically feasible? Because both parties, the MLBPA and the league itself, seem to have very differing ideas of what that phrase means. What is economically feasible? The players are saying, it's economically feasible for you to give us way more than what you're offering with these reduced salaries. The league, meanwhile, is saying, we can't afford to do that. I discussed the kickbacks, the $100 million that would be deferred if the postseason got canceled. That's what the players offered back to the league. And this report in The Athletic today says that the league scoffed at that notion. They don't even want it. They don't want the $100 million in deferrals because they would have to pay the proposed interest and take on additional debt. That's what everything keeps coming back to from the league is every offer that you guys are sending us is costing us a ton of money. Even if you offer to give us $100 million, we have to pay interest. We're taking on more debt. We can't afford to do it. We keep getting hung up on the same thing. We keep getting new proposals from both sides, but they keep leading us back to the same conclusion, which is that the league is saying we're losing too much money, and the players are saying, prove it. Show us. Show us how you're losing this money. How can you expect us to strike a deal with you, one that you're proposing, that's going to cost our players large portions of their salary without showing us why we should have to do it?
Do you think that's why? Because the owners, what they did yesterday with that proposal, even though it still is off from certain things the players want, like 114 games to 50, that is a pretty big margin. But it was the first movement in the right direction toward coming to an agreement. It was the first time that one side really, I guess, agreed to at least one term of the others with the prorated salary. Do you almost view that from the owners as a sign of weakness to say, we should probably come closer to agreeing here so they don't keep asking to open our books, because we can't open our books to them. And so we have to come to an agreement. So we need to kind of lax our stipulations here.
If we open our books to them, they're going to realize how bad we're screwing them over. If that's the case, then we're never going to get anywhere. If the league and the owners are saying we can't ever do that, that's never going to be an option.
There
will not be a season this year.
I mean, unless they basically do everything the players, or at least come close to it. Like, instead of 114 games, we'll agree to all your stipulations, but we're doing 100 or something. Like, I bet the players would agree to that.
Yeah, I just don't see how we're getting anywhere. It seems like that, you know, sides are sending proposals, which makes you at least feel like there is room for a negotiation here, but this doesn't feel like much of a negotiation. It really doesn't, because these sides do not seem to be getting any closer together. They're just kind of moving the goalposts without making any sort of concessions to one another. We're going to have David Leske on the show tomorrow, and he'll break this down in greater extent. He understands the finer details of this, maybe more than the common man. So we'll have him on tomorrow to kind of explain it to us. It is 23 after the hour, and this is Rock Chalk Sports Talk.
You're listening to Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwert and Derek Johnson on FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
About 3:30, we'll talk to Matt Tate of the LJ World coming up about 10 minutes from now. You know, yesterday, the Big 12, well, each school released it individually that I saw, but the Big 12 had a, I guess it was a compilation of all of the basketball coaches in the conference. I don't know exactly how to describe it. It was each coach, they were all reading a statement. It was a montage of them talking about coming together and fighting racism in this country and trying to get better and fix these problems. And it's important for specifically college football and basketball coaches to let their voices be heard and speak out loudly against racism in this country, knowing that most of their teams are made up of young black men. And they're going into the homes of these men when they are kids, right? A lot of times when they're 16, 17 years old, and they're sitting in front of their parents and these kids and essentially pitching to them why their university and their program is going to be the best option for them, for their basketball careers, and otherwise. And these coaches, most of them, especially in the Big 12, have been doing this for decades now. And it's really easy to kind of toe the company line, so to speak. And that's not maybe necessarily the fairest way to describe it, but there is always caution from coaches, I think, to take any sort of what could be construed as a political stance. And I said this yesterday, and I believe it to be true. Speaking out against racism in this country or police brutality against black people in this country, I don't believe to be a political stance. I know that there are some people who have tried to turn it into a political stance, but this is the first time you have seen unanimously. And you can talk about the brands doing it, like the corporations speaking out against it. It's really easy to be jaded when you watch that and say, okay, are you really against racism, or do you feel like this is the end thing to do and you want to make sure all of your customers know that you issued a statement against it? You can be jaded if you want, or you can say that they really have their best interest. And I'm sure some do, some don't. There's probably a mix of both. With college athletics, it's different. You've got very massive fan bases that a lot of times sprawl against different states. And I know that there have been some football coaches, particularly in the southern part of this country, who have received criticism for not really speaking out against it yet. And that becomes the other thing. It's okay if everyone's speaking out, but you haven't. Why haven't you? Is it because you don't believe in these protests? Is it because you don't believe in racism? Is it because you don't want to upset some of your fans who you think may not be on board with this movement that's happening across the country? And we don't know the answers to those questions, but I do think it's positive to see these coaches speaking out. What I want to know and what I'm genuinely curious in is, are these coaches now going to go out of their way to empower their players? These kids are going to be returning to campus soon. And I wonder what kinds of discussions will be had with these coaches, football, basketball, about how these kids can and should be using their voices. And I'm not at all insinuating that in the past coaches have told players not to, or have said, hey, it's not really worth it to use your voice right now. Think about the potential risks involved. But that's always tied to some sort of political stance, which is why I again want to reiterate, I don't think this is a political stance. And I truly hope that coaches, like, and specifically here at Kansas, that Bill Self and Les Miles, both of whom coach predominantly black athletes year in and year out, both of whom have black assistant coaches on their staffs, I hope that there will be not just an open dialogue, but encouragement and maybe even, and I don't know the right word, if it's necessarily lessons or if it's teaching or if it's just listening and trying to empower these kids and telling them, like, you do, by association with this program, now have a bigger voice than maybe the kids that you grew up with or people that you know that aren't playing college sports. You now have a voice, and you should use that for good. You're not just a basketball player. You're not just here to suit up on Monday and Tuesday nights and Saturday afternoons to play football and basketball. You can use your voice for more than just being an athlete, because that, if you want to think selfishly, that will be the best recruiting pitch that you'll ever be able to give when you're going into the homes of these kids and their families saying, I'm going to get you ready for basketball. I'm going to further your career. You're going to get an education. And beyond that, we're going to empower you. you're going to be able to use your voice and your name and your notoriety for whatever cause that you want to get behind, for whatever you think is a noble, worthy way to use your voice for good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just saw a tweet from, I think it was like Jeff Goodman, talking about how the Ohio coach had like a Zoom meeting talking with his players about this and like was asking them, how many of you guys are actually like registered to vote and where can you make a difference in regards to that? And they're all getting registered. Or there was a piece in The Athletic talking about the Appalachian State head coach, Sean Clark. He was one of his players put together or helped organize a protest in that area. I think, Appalachian State's in West Virginia? Is that right? One of the Carolinas? I don't know. But wherever Appalachian State is, helped organize a protest, and he saw the flyer for it, and he went out there with his athletic director, with his wife, and helped support the protest because he wanted his players' voices to be heard. And that's like one of the quotes in the story that said, these players have voices and they should be heard on this stuff. So you do have coaches that are taking that good step to allow that stuff. But I'm sure, like you said, there's going to be a I don't know if it'll be an equal amount. That's probably too many. But there will be a section of coaches that don't say anything, don't want anything to do with this. And I mean, if you just want to talk about the sports apps aspect, I would think that will have a negative impact on recruiting. But if you want to talk about the human aspect, like, that's probably going to be a telltale sign of a lot of these coaches' character.
Yeah, because I'm not criticizing anyone. I think the video that the Big 12 and those coaches released yesterday is great. I saw that Chris Beard and Texas Tech and his players, they went on a silent march through Lubbock yesterday. That is great. All of these things are good. But as I mentioned on yesterday's show, for people like us, for white people who maybe generally in the past haven't spoke up about this in the past, it's easy to do it when everyone is doing it. It's not as easy to do it when you're the only one, when all of a sudden now things have quieted down, not as many people are speaking out. I don't expect every brand to be fighting racism actively week in and week out over the next couple of years. It's much easier to do it when a lot of your fellow white people are now maybe stepping out of their box and doing it. And that's what I'm curious about. A month down the line, next year, 2 years from now, are these coaches still going to be going out of their way to actively fight racism and make sure their players are empowered to do the same?
Right. And I mean, that's a question for all of us. That's not just a question for coaches. That's a question for everybody who maybe you're white.
No, and
you haven't
and I'm not being
experience.
Critical because it's just that when these coaches do it, their voice carries much more weight than when somebody like you or I does it.
Right. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Because they have that added platform. But yeah, I mean, that is a question for everybody. And I mean, like we said yesterday, we're two white guys. We don't have the same experiences, so all we can do is try to spread the message, empathize, listen, things like that, go out and try to make a difference. And it's one thing I know growing up, like me personally, I don't know, when you would like watch old movies where you'd see racism, whether it was something as simple as like, I don't know, like a sports movie where they encountered it, or to something that was more historical, or you'd study history in school and you'd see racism, you'd talk about the Civil War, and you'd kind of think in your head, like, man, if I was born back then, if I was back around then, I would choose the right side. I would be somebody who would, I don't know, help with the Underground Railroad or help, like, abolish slavery or help justice from racism, like, whatever it is. And it's easy to think that. It's easy to say that. But now we're in our challenge. So time to prove it, right? Time to buck up here to where if you think that if you would have been around in a different time period where you would have been around something to try to protest against or handle against racism, then you got to speak out about it now because this is happening now and you have your chance.
We'll talk to Matt Tate about that. He's going to join us coming up next. Matt Tate of the Lawrence Journal World. This is Rock Chuck Sports Talk.
Bert and Derek Johnson on FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
It's about a quarter till four, and this is Rock Chalk Sports Talk. I am Nick Schwert. He is Derek Johnson. Thanks for hanging out with us today. It is time for our weekly discussion with our good friend from the Lawrence Journal World, KUSports.com. Matt Tate joins us once again on the show. Matt, before we get into, you know, KU and sports-related matters, it would seem insincere for me to not address the one topic that everybody in this country is talking about and participating in. I'm just curious as to you, as a Lawrence resident, as an American citizen, your reaction to the protest that took place across the country this weekend, just kind of what has been kind of going through your head over the last couple of days.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you asking. Like a lot of people, it's been scary, man. I'm certainly worried for our country and worried for so many people who are hurting. I'm right there with everybody that believes that we've got to find a way to fix this thing and do whatever it takes to make that happen. For you know, the injustices and the pain and the suffering to go away. And I think a lot of that starts with education. I think a lot of that starts with, you know, opening your hearts, opening your mind, listening to ways that you can help, however big or small. I've had some conversations with some dear friends of mine in the past few days that have been through this type of thing and experienced this type of racism and had it affect their lives and their families. And you know, my whole approach with them, which I feel like is shared by a lot of people, is, you know, to let them tell me their struggles and what their lives have been like so that I can better understand it, so that then we can all move forward, hopefully, with the same goal of making this world a better place. And so, you know, the stuff that's spread across the country is terrifying. You see all the violence, you see all the rioting and the looting and the protests and all that. And it's scary. It's a scary world right now. But again, I understand a lot of it. I see why it's happening. And at least right here in our backyard, I posted this on Twitter the other night. I was incredibly proud of my hometown and the way the protests went down here in Lawrence, Kansas, because it was a powerful scene. It had great purpose behind it, and it was very peaceful at the same time. And a lot of people from all walks of life came together to you know, stand together. And I know that's not solving anything in one night or overnight, but I was really proud to see that. And I wasn't surprised. I've lived here a long time. I know what Lawrence is about. I know the people that live here and raise their families here. And by and large, it's good people that try to do good things and do right by others. And so I wasn't surprised by any means, but at the same time, I was concerned, because you see things get out of control in other cities, and you see the tactics that are being used, I guess, by all kinds of people to make those things a chaotic scene. And I certainly was hoping that no one from outside of our community came in and tried to mess things up and stir things up. And it, luckily it didn't happen. But yeah, it was a beautiful thing. I didn't go down there. I have a 5-year-old daughter, and because of my fear of just what could potentially happen, I didn't feel like that was the place for her to be. So, you know, I watched from afar. Our paper did a great job covering it. I was proud of that, and I hope that it's the start of something that is a global thing, not just in, you know, this country, not just in our town, but you see this. I mean, you see Australia, New Zealand, Paris, Germany. I mean, you see people marching all over the world right now. And so as crazy as it is, as crazy as these times are, as scary as things are right now, I think there are a lot of signs of hope. And I hope that is what sort of prevails in the end, and everybody gets moving forward in the right direction as one.
Well, one thing I think has been an overwhelming positive is that we're seeing more people who maybe in the past haven't spoken out about racism who are doing that. I mean, just yesterday, all the Big 12 basketball coaches released that compilation video of them, you know, speaking out and saying that, you know, enough is enough and it's time for change. And it's, you see that sort of stuff, and I always go back to Colin Kaepernick, and there have been plenty of other incidents before that and since that where athletes or people in sports have spoken out, and while I think there are a lot of people who have gotten behind that in the past and have supported that, there are always going to be detractors, and you know the phrase. You've probably heard people say it, stick to sports, right? We don't want
to
hear you
sports.
Talk
right.
about, you know, political issues or societal issues. We just, you know, we want to see you play basketball. We want to see you play football. And I'm curious now for those coaches who you saw yesterday, and you could extend it to football as well, who in large part are coaching young black men. I wonder, do you think that when these kids get back on campus in a couple of weeks, and even if you want to go farther down the line, do you think there will be a shift? And I'm not insinuating that this hasn't been the case in the past, but it certainly hasn't been publicized if it has been. Do you think there will be a shift where these coaches are having more conversations about these kids in terms of empowering them and almost encouraging them to use their voice on whatever platform to support whatever cause they see fit to do?
Yeah, I think so. I think to some degree anyway. It's really hard because you have to, in order to empower someone, you know, you have to know, and you have to, in some ways, at least be able to put yourself in their shoes. And that's hard for a 60-year-old white male basketball coach to you know, it's hard for those guys in a cultural sense to just get down with those guys and talk about their music, right? Or their shoes or you know, whatever their sayings are, their phrases are. And I'm not talking about just black and white, you know, I'm talking about just the culture of young people. So you know, that's tough, but I do think that this latest you know, situation, for lack of a better word, is certainly going to inspire some of that. I've seen it already. I can't remember, just about 10 minutes ago, I saw on Twitter someone, a basketball coach somewhere, said he had a conversation with his team maybe today, and one of the things they talked about was exactly what you're saying, you know, using your voice, how you can make a difference, and all of that. And he found out that half of his team was not registered to vote. You know, they're most of them, if not all of them, 18 years old. They weren't all registered to vote. So he, you know, sort of spearheaded that. And he said by the end of the week, they will be. And so that's awesome. To me, that is a coach doing exactly what a coach, a mentor, a teacher, someone who is older and wiser, so to speak, can help those kids and take them down that path. And I think we will see a lot more of that. I hope we will. Because, you know, the bottom line is you said it, you know, in just the first couple of words you uttered, it's time. And I think that's what this is showing me. That's what this is showing a lot of people, is it's time for actions to be what lead us and guide us, and not just talk, and not just sympathy, and not just, oh, I understand, yeah, I feel bad. I mean, that's not getting it done. And so actions can be big, actions can be small. You know, I don't think it has to be every human being out there sets out to create a movement that changes the world. I think if everybody just does their part collectively and in their own community, in their own lane, in their own home, you know, whatever they can do to act and put these things into motion, then I think collectively that gets things going where it needs to go and where they need to go. So I do think coaches will do that. I do think that there's a greater understanding right now. And I think it's because of how widespread this is. You know, I mean, you look at Colin Kaepernick, or you look at Ferguson, or you look at these things, any of these incidents where people were killed by police brutality. And you know, you find that those things, unfortunately, are somewhat common and you know, you've seen it before. And so, you know, you hate to see it and you hate to hear about it, and it gets to you. But then, you know, the next day something new is on your radar or whatever. And so this is prolonged. This is across the globe, certainly across this country. And I think that widespread nature of what's happening right now is at least going to be convincing enough to everyone that's paying attention that, look, this is different, and it does feel different. And so it's time for me to be different in what I can do to help this situation. And again, it can be as small as talking to your team if you're a coach, or talking to your family if you're a father or a mother or whatever. It can be that small as long as you're doing something. And I think we're going to see a lot of that in athletics. And I hope it can work. I hope it can help. I hope it can do some good, and I really believe it will.
We're talking to Matt Tate of the LJ World here on Rock Chalk Sports Talk. Well, Matt, it sounds like these guys are going to be coming back relatively soon. I know Big 12 players are football allowed to come back June 15th, basket, or every other sport on July 1st. I know you spoke to Bill Self recently, and he told you that they were targeting a July 6th return for the basketball team. Whether it be football or basketball, do you have any insight or idea if KU is going to be just adhering to, in terms of the medical and health protocols, are they going to be adhering to the guidelines that the Big 12 set forth? Are they going to be doing more in terms of testing? Do you have any insight as to what it's going to look like when these guys get back?
Yeah, every time I've asked, it's been that they're planning to follow the rules and guidelines outlined by the Big 12. And I think most of the conference will be that way. They certainly have the right and the opportunity to do more if they want, but I don't think it's necessary. I mean, I think the Big 12 has been on top of this thing for quite a while now and is you know, doing everything it can to put together the best plan to move forward. So I think that's probably good enough. And, you know, time will tell, obviously, but I think KU's planning to stick to that. And that includes dates for athletes to come back on campus. That includes, you know, what happens when they're on campus. That includes testing. That includes what happens when someone gets sick. Because, you know, Bob Bowlesby said this last week, the Big 12 commissioner, that you know, it's going to happen, man. I mean, kids are on campuses are going to get COVID-19 virus, and kids on our athletic teams are going to get it. And so we can't hope that that doesn't happen and then not be prepared when it does. We have to assume it's going to and have a plan in place now for the protocol of what that looks like and what you do moving forward from there. So I think the Big 12 is very, very prepared for that. And I think KU's fine to be following their plans and guidelines. And I think that's what they're planning to do. That's what I'm told every time I ask. So I think in that way, it will be a good thing. And that's what's weird. It's June 2nd, 13 days away from the 15th when football players get back here. That's as close to a return to sports as it gets right now. A couple of weeks after that, you're looking at Kansas basketball players being back in Lawrence. And, you know, normally that's the first week of June, and they do their pickup games and they work out and they do all that stuff that they do every offseason. And if they're able to get here and get going on July 6th, it'll all be voluntary workouts. It'll all be, you know, player run, things like that. But that's basketball season. That's a normal offseason all of a sudden. And really, at that point, you're talking about just being delayed by about a month. So, there are enough signs right now out there that continue to point to sports returning sooner rather than later. And we'll see what happens over the next few months to know if that is sustainable and if that can actually happen. And once they start, do they continue? But I get the feeling that that's everybody's plan right now. And it's kind of wild to think about. We're right on the doorstep of that happening.
He is Matt Tate. He'll be covering this story, as will we, as it progresses and these players get closer to coming back on campus. Matt, I appreciate you, as always. Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts and coming on with me today.
Yeah, man. Thank you, Nick. I appreciate you asking. It's important to talk about, no doubt about it. And I don't know if you shared your Facebook post with the world or just those of us lucky enough to be Facebook friends with you, but it was awesome. And if you haven't shared it, you should, because you said a lot of great stuff and a lot of real stuff and things that need to be said and things that need to be heard. So I hope everybody can, you know, follow that same path and we can all move forward for a better world, man.
Hey, appreciate you, Matt. We'll talk again soon, all right?
Yes, sir. Sounds good. Thanks, Nick.
All right, thank you.
You're listening to Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwert and Derek Johnson on FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
It's a quarter till five, and this is Rock Chalk Sports Talk. I'm Nick Schwartz. He's Derek Johnson. Back in January, February, I don't remember exactly when we did it, but we did a Let's Rank Stuff of the best hot things on a cold day. I think it was really cold out, and you're always thinking about what would make me feel the best right now. And that was a very highly contested list. You had a problem with me putting blanket number one.
Yeah, I don't even remember what I was mad about, but I know I was furious. What was I mad about?
I think I put blanket ahead of maybe? I put a blanket ahead of a heater, and you said, "Well, a heater does the blanket's job without needing it." I don't know what your problem was, but you were very angry.
I stand by whatever I said.
I stand by with what I said. I always stand by my list, and now it's time for another one. In another edition of Let's Rank Stuff, we're going to be taking a look at the top 10 cold things on a hot day. It's hot out today. It's going to be hot all week. It's going to be really hot this weekend. It's going to be like mid-90s. What happened? It was just chilly out a couple weeks ago. Now all of a sudden, not chilly. Hot. But these are some chilly things that will make you feel better on a hot day. Let's get it going right now. Right now. Right this second. Let's get it going
Number
right now.
10.
Okay, thank you. Drinking a cold beer. Here is the question.
That should be higher.
Is a cold beer the number one cold beverage that you can have on a hot day?
Depends on the situation. Because you're not... If you go for a walk on a hot day, you take your dog for a walk, you come back, you don't immediately go, I am parched. I need a cold beer, right? In that case, you wouldn't want a cold beer. It's going to dehydrate you. But
I'm just imagining, you know, sticking your hand into that ice cooler and reaching down to the very bottom to get that coldest beer. You bring your hand out, it's a little bit numb. That whole experience is so delightful. Now, the problem is, A, it's going to dehydrate you and make you more thirsty. That's not great.
Just drink another one.
Most physicians wouldn't suggest to drink copious amounts of beer on really hot days, but that's not what we're here for. It's about that first sip. It's about cracking it open, and you feel it go down. You can feel it like hit your chest, and you can feel it hit your stomach. It cools your whole body. And I just feel like, may not be science behind this, it's going to release some endorphins. It's going to make you feel better beyond just the coldness of the beer. That's why I chose beer over water. I chose it over lemonade.
Is the highest beverage.
It is the highest beverage. It is the only beverage that is going to be on this list.
What?
Yep.
So you're telling me a cool glass of water, that ice water, on a hot day, that is not top 10?
Because it doesn't taste as good.
This is a travesty.
It doesn't taste
it's
as good.
It's better for you. It hydrates you. It keeps you alive,
okay,
quite frankly.
If you want to be
and it does taste
if
good.
If you want to be the guy carrying the water over beer.
No, I'm not saying
argument,
that. I'm
fine.
Saying both have a place on this list. Have you ever, like when you were a kid, you played sports? I don't know if you ever had this, but it would be a hot day. You had practice, and then you go take your water break, and there's the big like jugs of water that has the thing you flip open to drink out of,
yeah,
and it's filled with ice water. There is nothing better than that sip.
Nothing better. So
nothing.
That's number one
of just things in general.
I don't have
yeah.
it even on the top 10, and you have it at number one. Okay.
Number nine.
Standing in front of a fan and lifting your shirt up so it gets your belly.
Stop.
What?
Just take your shirt off.
You're in public. You can't do that. Like, if I were to go over to that fan
you think that's
do that,
appropriate.
Do that move?
You think to go to a public fan and stick your shirt over it, that's appropriate.
Well, what often happens on a hot day is that you are seeking out ways to get some reprieve from the hotness, even if it's only for a couple seconds. Like, you know you're not going to stand in front of that fan all day. It's just a quick little 30 seconds. I need to get cool. You're sweating, so the fan hits the sweat and immediately cools it. Maybe you hit the back sweat a little bit. I've done that. I was in Dallas a couple years ago, July. It's like 110 degrees out. We're at a bar, and I'm sweating all over. It's going through my shirt. And they had one of those big industrial-sized barrel fans, and I went and stood in front of that thing for 30 seconds, and all of a sudden that sweat starts to cool. You lift up your shirt a little bit, dry yourself out. It was so amazing.
But why does this have to be specific to that? Why can't it just be fans?
Okay, it can be fans.
Okay,
but that's
I'm
what
happier.
I do when I hit the
fan. But then
fans
should be higher.
Okay, so everything needs to be higher. You don't. I have eight more to go. You
yeah,
think I have
and I have no idea what eight are going to be better.
Well, now you're going to find out.
Number eight.
Sticking your head in the freezer.
Nope. Rather have a fan. You can't stick your head in the freezer for as long as you can sit by a fan. When I am sleeping at night, I'd like to have the fan on. I can't just sleep at night with my head in the freezer.
But a freezer is much, much, much cooler than a fan.
Yeah, but you can't do it as long, and you're wasting more energy.
So you seem to be getting really caught up on the length of time that you can use these things. But the problem with that, it's just like the value of diminishing returns, right? The more pieces of pizza you eat, the less satisfying they're going to be.
I think that's how it works.
Yes, it is. The first piece of pizza is going to taste better. Then the second one is like, okay, not quite as good as the first. The third and fourth ones, you're like, okay, I'm kind of stuffed. This doesn't taste as good. It's the same thing.
Okay, you're
not going to keep thinking about the fan all night. You're not going to be laying there, oh, I love this fan. This fan is so great.
You know
eventually,
why?
You're going to forget
peaceful.
About it.
Because you're peaceful, you're happy.
But then why don't you go dealing with the hot day.
Why don't you go home today? Why don't you, when you get to your apartment, you spend an hour in the air conditioning, and then after an hour, you turn it off? Because you don't want diminishing returns on
the
air conditioner.
That's if you only had 1 hour of air conditioning, that 1 hour would be the best hour of your day. It's the immediate gratification of what it feels like, and the immediate gratification of sticking your head in the freezer is much better than the immediacy of getting hit with that fan.
Number 7.
You're going to hate this one. Putting a wet towel on your neck.
I mean, that's an underrated one, but
okay,
why is that better than a fan?
You
get water everywhere. It doesn't last, again, nearly as long.
But when you stick that towel into the cooler of ice and you pull it out and put it on your neck and it sends chills down your spine, it's orgasmic.
Do you get every version of cold things from a cooler of ice?
I mean, the ice is a very cold thing, okay. So... adding ice to the equation is going to make things colder by default. So, yeah, if you're on a golf trip, if you're doing yard work in the outdoors, it's hot out, you got to get this work done, cold towel on the neck is going to make you feel a whole lot better.
Number 6.
I realized I put two things on this list twice, but this one's a little bit different.
Okay.
You're going to hate this one as well, but...
Did you just try to make this list look bad?
This is opening up the windows in your house so you get a breeze through the house. It's like, kind of like a fan, but this is for a little bit lesser hot days.
Wait, so you're telling me this is worse than a fan?
No, this is better than
better
a
than.
It's lesser than a. It's lesser than a fan because it's not immediacy. But you ever get the...
Why is it ranked higher?
Don't you want a breeze going through the house on a hot
day?
But I
can do that with a fan, and if it's 95 degrees outside, why would I open my windows?
Well, this is for lesser hot days. This is for days
when... No, this list is not for lesser hot days. It's cool things on a hot day.
I stand by the ranking.
Number 5.
There may have been a slight error in my...
Oh, it sounds like
in my ranking, but now we're going to get into the good stuff. Number 5 is a cool breeze. A still day, there's no wind, you're looking for anything. How many times have you been outside on a hot day and you just say to someone, oh, sure could use some wind right now, or wouldn't be so hot if we had a breeze going, and then all of a sudden you get hit with that cool gust of wind and then boom, it's gone.
Yeah, it's nature's fan, except when you're outside, you don't expect it, you don't know when it's going to happen. So when it hits, the almost surprise, the coolness you feel is wonderful.
And you don't know when it's coming back. You don't know if that's going to be the only breeze that you get hit with all day. They make songs about cool breeze. They make drinks named after cool breeze. That is how refreshing a cool breeze is. It goes beyond what it brings to us. Other things are like, this is as good as a cool breeze.
Number 4.
And this, even though is mostly attributed to kids, adults, I think, channel their inner child when they do this. Running through a sprinkler. So yes, this is kids running through a sprinkler that their parents set up out in the yard. But this is also if you're walking down the sidewalk, it's hot, the business has, or the lawn next to you has a sprinkler going, and you maybe stick around for a little bit longer just to get hit with the spritz.
That is a great feeling.
I do that on the golf course a lot. They got the sprinklers going out in the fairway. Maybe on a cool day, I'm running out of my way to make sure I don't get hit with the sprinkler. On a hot day, I might stand there for a little while. It's worth soaking my whole body just to get a little refreshness.
Number 3.
Is refreshness a word? Number 3? eating a popsicle.
Okay. This is fine.
Not ice cream.
A specific type of popsicle?
The bomb pops.
That's a good one. I think, what are they called? Otter Pops?
Are those like the push pops?
Yeah. That's what I would probably
the
put.
The paper rounding. Yeah. Those
no,
are
no,
good
no,
as...
no, no, no. Not the paper rounding. The ones where they come in the little like plastic tubes.
I love popsicles because you know the melting is imminent, that you must eat it as quickly as possible. And the faster you eat it, the more numb your mouth is going to get. You're going to feel almost cold. I remember days where it's hot out. You shove that popsicle into your body as quickly as possible.
Freezing.
And then you're almost cold. After eating the popsicle, you're almost like, oh, that was too cold. That is the pinnacle of coldness.
I think these should be negated a little bit for getting a brain freeze. Uncomfortable.
That's when you know you've beat the heat, though. You are so hot, your brain is now frozen.
Number two.
The first step that you take into air conditioning after being outside in the hot. In the heat.
One of my favorite things about Texas is everything is way over air conditioned.
What is the more refreshing 55 feeling?
55 degrees.
Is it stepping into the car that has already been running and the AC is going, or stepping into the house with the AC going? I think it is the car, because if you're in the car, you haven't felt the air conditioning yet. If you're in the house, you probably were just in a car with air conditioning, and maybe you walked from the car to the house. But getting into that car with the air conditioning on full blast that's already been running for a couple minutes, that's pretty good.
That's the caveat. It has to be running for a couple minutes, because that would be on the negative if it's not. You walk in, you turn the car on, blast it to full, and it's just hot air
it's the worst.
Shooting out at you.
That's like the worst feelings on a hot day, when you realize your AC is not working.
Number one.
Can I get a drum roll, please? The number one cold thing on a hot day is jumping into a swimming pool. This gets bonus points if you weren't planning on swimming, or if you're not wearing proper swimming attire, because then you know it's spontaneous. Then you know, I can't stand this heat, I must get in the pool. If you're already planning on swimming, still a great feeling, but it's pre-planned, therefore you know you're about to get cold. When you just happen to be around a swimming pool and you're like, screw it, I'm getting down in my skivvies and I'm getting into the pool, that is even better, because it's spontaneous, because you didn't know it was coming. It is the absolute best feeling that you can have on a hot day. Now, what would detract from it is if it's like a heated pool, or all of a sudden you realize this isn't as cold as it was supposed to be, because then you're jumping into bath water. That's almost the worst feeling in the world.
Have you ever had that? Like, you've been somewhere where it's like tropical, or like on a beach city
ever,
somewhere?
If you ever go to Florida or Mexico and get into a pool.
And you're like, it's 90 degrees, humid outside, and you're ready to jump in the cool pool, and you jump in, it's like an 85-degree pool.
Yeah, that's the negative impact.
That's like,
because
the
air conditioning, then you're preparing for the cold. And then it's warm. It's almost like jumping into a hot tub at that point. If you're preparing for cold and then you jump into something warm, it's going to feel like it's boiling hot. And that's not what you want. Jumping into a cold pool on a hot day, it's the best thing you can do. There was an error in the list. That was the first time that's ever happened. It's never going to happen again. You have my word. Cue the Tim Tebow speech when he started crying up at the podium. All right, that's Let's Rank Stuff, and that's Rock Chalk Sports Talk. Thanks to Matt Tate of the LJ World. Thanks to you for listening. With Derek Johnson, I'm Nick Schwert. We'll see you tomorrow at 3:00.